You're listening to the winning literary show, Off the Shelf Books Talk Radio, live with host Denise Turney, author of the books Long Walk Up, Portia, Love Pour Over Me, Spiral, Love Has Many Faces, and Rosetta's Great Hope. Turn up your dial and get ready for a blast of feature author interviews, 411 on book festivals, writing conferences, and so much more. Ready? Let's go.
Success usually comes to those who are too busy looking for it. Success usually comes to those who are too busy looking for it. That's from Henry David Thoreau, and he's one of my favorite writers, and I love that quote. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this Saturday, June 24th. Off the Shelf to our loyal listeners. We had it for 18 years. 18 years Off the Shelf been going. Started on radio, moved over to podcast. We started at Rainbow, so I loved being over there. They had that smooth jazz, and then we would come on with Off the Shelf. But headed for 18 years. For our loyal listeners, again, thank you. If this is your first time tuning in to Off the Shelf, I want to tell you that you, yes, you are listening to the Winning Book Podcast, Off the Shelf Books. We have a wonderful author on deck for you and excited to introduce her to you. When I'm researching for the shows, the questions I come, coming up with questions to ask the guests, is always something about them always intrigues me and interests me, and I always look forward to the interview. But before we get to that one, I recently released a book, Heal Gorgeous, Wisdom Within You Knows the Way. And it's a book of poetic writings, and it really talks about the one true self. We often have that internal conflict where we want to do something, but something in us says, no, you can't, or you look dumb, or people laugh at you. You got to keep forging ahead with that what you know you really should do, what's good for you. Till we become like this one whole complete, just your one true self. Once we meet our one true self, I mean, life really, really takes off then. So I encourage you. Proverbs, short stories, poems, things that really lower your defenses, but you can really start to see the truth in some of the writing that comes through. And I encourage you to get a copy of Heal Gorgeous, Wisdom Within You Knows the Way by Denise Turney, and you can get it in ebook, paperback, or in hardback. So please go treat yourself to a copy of Heal Gorgeous today. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf books guest, and today's guest is Kimberly Sullivan. Kimberly worked in journalism and government in the U.S., Czech Republic, and Austria. Today she makes her home in Rome. Oh, my goodness, that's a place I have romanticized Italy for years. And while in Rome, she works in international development, and she writes fiction. She's a member of the Women's Fiction Writers Association and the Historical Novel Society. She has written short stories and novels, and amongst her novels there's The Dark Blue Waves, Drink Wine and Be Beautiful, which was slated for release just last month, May, Three Coins, and In the Shadow of the she's going to have to maybe correct me, Apennines. And I encourage you to check Kimberly Sullivan out online at KimberlySullivanAuthor.com, and I will spell it KimberlySullivanAuthor.com. I'm going to do that one more time. KimberlySullivanAuthor.com. KimberlySullivanAuthor.com. And I think you're going to love her website. It's just delightful. She has this intriguing, beautiful pictures of Rome. I enjoyed the time I spent there. And we're just absolutely honored to have Kimberly Sullivan on Off the Shelf this morning. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Kimberly.
Thank you so much, Denise. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me, and congratulations for 18 years. That's a real achievement for the program.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, I just thought of this. We have had guests come on international, most in the U.S. What time is it there?
So we're 6 hours ahead of East Coast time, so it's 5 o'clock. And you're lucky. I'm at home today. There was a big demonstration that goes by my house like every Saturday because that's what people do in Italy. So there was lots of noise. Now it's quiet, luckily. So timing is perfect.
Oh, okay, because we've had people tune in. They're like, oh, it's 2 o'clock in the morning here or it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh, my God.
No, you were much kinder with me. Thank you, Denise.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad it's not so because we usually do it like 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, New York City for U.S. It's just a pleasure to have you. And, again, I love visiting your website. I encourage people to go over there. They can go over there now even as they listen to the interview and learn more about you and how you got started in the writing and your books. So, but to the first few questions I ask every guest who comes on, just to give our listeners a little backstory on the guest before I start talking about their books. So, Kimberly, can you please tell our off-the-shelf listeners where you grew up and what life was like for you growing up?
Yes, well, thanks, Denise. I grew up in America, so in the suburbs of Boston. And then when I was in middle school, we moved up to upstate New York, to Saratoga Springs, New York, which is close to Albany and close to the Adirondack Mountains. So I did move a bit more, but those, let's say, are the two big places where I lived growing up. And yeah, no, when I look back at childhood and having grown up, I think it was really an idyllic time, especially looking at it as an adult, no, back there, because I think of the lovely summers that we used to have, lazy summers, and being able to have all of that free time for imagination, and I love to swim, so I would be pretty much a fish all summer long, figuring out how, between being in a pool or a lake or someplace, and always a stack of books that I wanted to read, so that was something that I truly enjoyed about childhood. And when I look back at certain things, I don't know, this is how I feel, I don't know how you feel, but when I look at this, I think we were kind of lucky not to have all of the electronic devices that kids have today, because I just remember having a lot of time for imagination, going out and playing, being out all day. Your parents would send you out in the morning, and you wouldn't come back until dinner time. So, yeah, I think that those are some of the nice memories that I have of childhood. I kind of miss that freedom.
I agree with you. Oh, my goodness. Kids, now, some people, like where I work, they have their kids involved in sports, and their kids are involved in things where they have to be outside. And so some of it is parenting, but by and large, I see that kids, they don't come out. I may see them out playing for, if they're out an hour a day, that's like a lot. We used to be out for hours.
I don't think we were allowed back in. I don't know if you had the same the experience of most of the kids my age. You were gone. Come back.
Yeah, get out of here. We did our chores and then go outside and your friends come knock on the door. Can so-and-so come out and play? And then you go outside and you stay out for the rest of the day. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, you said you loved books. So when you were a little girl, Kimberly, what did you dream, though? What did you dream of becoming when you grew up?
Well, I think that when I was really young and really a bookworm, I mean, excitement for me was definitely going to the library and picking out my books, or whether as a treat, being able to get books in a bookstore that I would choose. I really loved it, and I did want to become an author when I was young, probably through maybe junior high or so, because I used to do some writing contests for schools and things like that, and participate in those. But then I got very interested in politics and started working in politics fairly young, and I really loved history. So undergraduate, I studied political science and history, and then I got very interested in being a journalist. So I worked a bit in politics and then as a journalist, and just life took me in a different direction, obviously. I've been living abroad for many years, working in international relations. But finally I said, you know what, I want to go back to do what I wanted to do when I was a kid. And so I started publishing 3 years ago, back in 2021. I had joined a writing group. I had joined the Women's Fiction Writers Association Historical Novel Society, so I was very interested in doing this. But then when I decided to publish, I really haven't looked back then, so I'm really very enthusiastic about indie publishing, self-publishing, and also having a full-time job. So I think you can do both. At least I found the balance for me. I'm truly enjoying it.
You can do both, and a lot of writers do. But if you're going to come out with a lot of, if you want to keep your career going, I think as a writer, whether you do a part-time or full-time. You got to keep writing and publishing and marketing and promoting
Absolutely.
Your new books. And it takes time and energy.
Absolutely. That's true.
You better really, whatever it is you do, you have to really love what you do. I don't care what it is, because you're going to invest
yep.
a lot of time and energy in it generally. Who or what inspired you? Was there a reader in one of your parents, an avid reader, a teacher? Who or what inspired you? You birthed your love for books and inspired you to pursue writing?
Well, I think that especially growing up, my mom was a teacher and a librarian, so that also helped with the books and everything. And then I think that, there was a lot of emphasis on reading in schools. I think when I was growing up, and I think that I always did have good librarians and teachers who did that, so I did grow up loving it and continued to. And then, I think one of the nice things was when I decided here in Rome that just because I wanted to start with a hobby, something outside of work and something outside of other family commitments, when I started joining writers groups here in Rome, in Italy, I started off publishing short stories. So that's how I kind of got into writing. And then, of course, once you have a writing community, as you know, as a fellow author, it's so helpful because you can bounce ideas off of someone. You bring your writing. They give you different insight. You learn things. So, I think that my writing groups are very, very important to me. And learning how to get better, learning how to improve, having your first set of beta readers to look at your work. I mean, that's something that I think continues to be inspiring, because we always need that kind of community.
Yes, I so agree. And kudos to you for going. You said you went back to what you knew you wanted to do when you were a kid, and you had the courage, and you went back and did it. And we're going to start in just a few more questions talking about your book, so people can see what came of your pursuing that something you want to do since you were a little girl. But I have to ask you this, because you live in Rome. Used to live in the U.S., and we've had guests on who've lived in several different countries. What was it like mm-hmm. working in journalism and government in the U.S., in the Republic, in Austria, and how do you think that has affected your writing?
Oh, well, I would definitely say a lot, because that comes into my writing a lot also. I mean, most of my books tend to be set abroad, and I really love that aspect of learning more about yourself by living elsewhere and speaking in a language that's not yours, right, and having customs that aren't yours. So I think that it always, since I tend to write women's fiction, which is very much about the discovery of self and, your personal journey too and growing stronger that way, I think that it's quite interesting how you can play that off in another culture that's in another language. I think that can be an interesting entry point for misunderstandings, for learning about yourself, for reevaluating and looking at things. So for me personally, I think that I use that a lot in my writing. But for me, I know I've had gone back and forth between Europe as a kid. I did have relatives not in Italy, but in Germany and Austria. So I had been, and I loved French. So I had always been going to France, which I loved. So it was exciting when I decided to move here. And when I was in college, I was studying political science and history, and that was the time that the wall was coming down, the Berlin Wall. So, all of Europe was changing. And I was going to start off, because I had interned a lot in journalism in the U.S., and I was going to, I used to work as a television journalist, I was going to start in a small station in the U.S., but I said, this is such an exciting time. I wanted to. So when I graduated, I moved over to what was then Czechoslovakia in Prague, and it was just such an exciting time to be there. And, in fact, I started in radio and then worked in television there, and I lived there for 3 years and just saw so many changes. So I'm very happy that I decided to do that. And I love life in the U.S., but I also love life in Europe, and it's been such a nice experience.
Oh, good for you. Oh, my goodness. People who travel and live abroad, that's something I got to just, that's on my bucket list. I really think it changes you. The more different cultures, people you see, your mind just opens
Absolutely.
Up more and more and more. Did your journalism work? Because when I think of a journalist, a lot of journalists have to cover stories sometimes in another country. Did that make it easy to travel to the different countries? Because you're going there, you know, you're not just going there and saying whatever happens, happens. You're going there on an assignment to complete work. Did that make it easier to travel to these different countries?
Well, yeah, when I was a journalist and I was, of course, living there and, you know, had to work in the language and had to do that, so that was very exciting. And now, of course, that I work in international development, I travel to countries because we do development projects in, you know, largely I work in sub-Saharan Africa, Near East, Asia, a little bit less Latin America, but so I've also traveled for work there, and that's more that I'm living here and then we'll travel there, so that's a little different from living there all the time. But of course it's a great experience because you learn so much, you get to meet a lot of different people, you get to see that things are completely different and in a different environment, which I think is always good for us, right? The things that we think are the way you do things and how things should normally be, it's completely different from region to region, country to country, and I think that it's good for us to stay flexible, right, about how things work you know, how you get something done. So, yeah, it's always been a part of my life. I love working in an international environment. I love traveling. I mean, I just also enjoy traveling in my free time. And, yeah, when our kids were growing up, they're a little bit older now, they're teenagers now, but, you know, we've always traveled with them, and I think that kind of exposure is very good.
Oh, my goodness. Here you are, a journalist, traveling, living in different countries, your perspective. As we start to talk about your books, I'm sure this shows up in your writing. Even if you try to keep it from doing so, you probably can't help it. It has to show up.
I wouldn't be able to.
And your characters, they probably are so well-developed and have so much depth. So to talk about one of your first books, can you give us an overview of your novel, Three Coins?
Yeah, well, Three Coins, I should say, Denise, right off, that I am someone who kind of steals all of my titles. My titles of books come from something else. So Three Coins, as you might imagine, I don't know if you know the 1954 film, Three Coins in a Fountain. It was a big Hollywood production about three women who come to work in Italy, in Rome. And this would have been right after, obviously, World War II, and they come to work when the Marshall Plan was really here, and they needed a lot of American staff, and they come over as secretaries, and they work here in Rome. And they all find love interests in Rome. And I said, well, it's kind of fun because I love that film. It's interesting. It's a very 1950s production, really beautiful, absolutely beautiful production, all these scenes of Rome. And I said, well, it's kind of fun to explore that with three modern women who come to Rome for some reason. They're three very different women, different stages of life, different you know, different family circumstances, different financial, economic levels. And they're kind of thrown together at an off-season beach resort, and no one else is in the town, and they all need a little break. And so they wind up, actually, these three very different women who all live as expats in Rome, becoming fast friends, and it's a friendship that they need at that stage of life, which is kind of a low for all of them. So it is a little bit like, I use the film as the example. In fact, they meet at a showing because it's raining in this beach town in the winter, and they see this, they show this film, this Three Coins in the Fountain. It gets them talking about life and about this. So it's really following these three women and the kind of unusual friendship that they form, but that comes, you know, how this happens when you meet friends at the right time in your life, when you really were fortunate to meet them. And so, yeah, that was a fun one because I enjoyed playing with the roles from women in the 1950s and kind of reflecting what has changed, what hasn't changed, and looking at all of those aspects. So that was my first novel, Three Coins.
Oh, my goodness. There are these women, let me go with the question I was going to ask. So could you introduce us to Emma? And what is she like? What's her personality, her strengths, her weaknesses? Tell us about Miss Emma.
Yeah, well, poor Emma, when we meet her, I mean, she might be considered a little bit privileged because she's married a wealthy Italian plastic surgeon to the stars. So, you know, she's had kind of a privileged life in Rome, and she has three children. But her husband isn't very faithful, and he tends to find very young women that are his clients and then become his lovers. So when we meet Emma, she's at a pretty low point because she's going through this difficult divorce. Her husband is much more interested in his young conquest than he is in having any kind of relationship with his children, and they're suffering too. So we meet her at that low point, and her daughter has just been in trouble at school, and she worries that she might get expelled. So yeah, she's really not in a good place. And then we meet a very different character who is another American living in Rome called Tiffany. Tiffany is very young and very beautiful and has a desire to be, this is a very typical thing in Italy, you have these television shows where the women dance very scantily clad on the television shows, and that's kind of their role. It's called the villine, and her dream in life is to be a villina on Italian television. So she's also having a difficult time with that because, as you can imagine, you're expected to exchange things for these slots. So she's facing her own problems with that, with men taking advantage of her and kind of wondering what she's doing, if she's being very superficial. And she is a bit superficial. So that's how we see her at the beginning. And then Anna Rita is Italian-American, so she comes from Yonkers outside of New York City, from a strong Italian-American family with Italian-American values, and she was supposed to marry a friend of the family, their son. It had been decided from when they were basically in diapers, and so since she jilts him and runs away to live in Rome and to have a life there, her family is quite angry with her. But, you know, Rome is an expensive city, and she's kind of scraping to get by and teaching English to very spoiled, wealthy Italians, and she's not very happy with her life. She's having a difficult time meeting men, or meeting all the wrong men, and her mother is of course putting pressure on her to get married. So all of these women have kind of hit this point where kind of catastrophic things happen to them, and they all just need to get away. So this is why they all find themselves at this beach resort off season, because they've really reached a breaking point. And so even though they're very different women, in speaking and in getting to know one another and spending time together, they understand that in each of them. And yeah, and slowly it's not a fast friendship, but slowly as they build their friendship and get an idea of what they want to do with their lives, it extends from there. And there's also some romantic elements too. So that's it's kind of women's fiction and a bit of romantic elements.
What year? So this is in Italy. What year is the story set in? What time period?
So, yeah, it's set contemporary, but it's taking place around 20. I had it around 2015.
Okay.
So pre-COVID fun.
Were families like in Italy still doing arranged marriages?
This was actually Italian American. This was back in New York in Yonkers. Wasn't quite an arranged marriage, but it was that the families were kind of pushing them together, right, to date, and so they were kind of expecting it. Yeah, so I sometimes the communities can be stronger with these things in America than they are than they are here. Yeah.
Interesting. Now, what attracted Emma? Has she ever worked on her own or had her own dreams? What attracted her to her ex-husband Dario Rinaldi? What was it about him? I know you said she's somewhat superficial, but when they first met, did she become that way? Was she always that way? What attracted them together? And did she know he was stepping out on her the whole time and she just turned the other way?
Yeah, no, she reflects on this a bit in the book, because obviously it didn't start off that way, right? It had been a long marriage and it became... No, she had been very ambitious because she had gone to... Yeah, Princeton undergraduate, then she went to do her master's degree at Georgetown, and she was doing, in fact, an internship in Rome at the American Embassy for a summer when she meets this handsome young Italian medical student. And, of course, he was very different at the time. They were both very idealistic, and he used to volunteer as a plastic surgeon with programs like Operation Smile and things that do pro bono work in many developing countries. So they were going together to Africa and India and everything and working, and she was working on development aspects and he was working there. So, yes, they used to have a very different life, but he entered into celebrity operations instead and started getting wealthy and began to change as a person.
And she was quite
busy with the kids and things were moving along, but she didn't quite realize everything. So, yeah, life changed them, I think.
You know, I love when writers show that because it's life, but you also want to sometimes hold to this romanticize life so that it starts sweet and it stays that way. But it's amazing how we change as different people come in and out of our life in different experiences.
Sure.
To where you look back decades and you're like, oh, my God, I've changed so much in the last 5 years or 10 years. It shocks even you. So Emma didn't start out the way she became, and then neither did her husband. So I just had to ask you this, though. She didn't see the changes happening where she could try to steer it or maneuver it, so it didn't – what came of their relationship to avoid it? There was nothing she could do?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think in her case, they have three children, so a daughter and twin sons. So she was very active taking care of the children, and he didn't have such an active role. So she got very busy with that. She stopped working, and, you know, she just – I think as many mothers do start dedicating all of the time to the family and then not noticing, and probably he was a little bit clever, at least in the beginning, how he was handling, I don't know, work conferences or things that he would go off. But, yeah, unfortunately they did, it did get to the point where there wasn't much to be done at that stage, and so she has to handle the next stage. And in fact, all women kind of do look at their lives, including Emma. And so an old friend does enter back into it. So she might have a chance for happiness again.
So, okay, when Emma, Anarita, and Tiffany meet at this resort, are they all single at the time? Is Emma going through the breakthrough? Are all of them single? And is Emma the only one who has been married?
Yes, she is the only one who has been married. Tiffany is quite young and has not, and she's only interested in very wealthy men who can get her into television, like producers and things like that. So obviously she's looking at men who are might not be the ideal partner. And poor Anarita is just going after men and kind of doing everything for them, but they might not be the right men for her either. So they haven't been particularly lucky in love, all three of them. So this is another thing that helps them a little bit to speak together, to work things out, to, you know, as girlfriends do with one another, to talk about things and bounce things off of them, and to also make the changes that they need to do for themselves to move forward.
Emma could be such a help. Oh, when you just talked about Tiffany in particular. Oh, my gosh, you could sit her down. Let me tell you something, sister. Oh, my goodness. So it sounds three coins off the shelf. Listeners, three coins. Oh, how interesting. When these three women get together and their experiences, hopefully they will listen to each other and they could save each other a lot of heartache. And this is a story that could, again, this is what I love about fiction. Your defenses are lowered, and you might see yourself in one of the characters, and it could help you make a better decision. Can you introduce us to any of the other, maybe just two more, major and minor characters who helped to move the story three coins forward?
Some of the major and minor characters in always in three coins.
Two other characters, two other can't miss, don't want to turn away from characters
major and minor in the story.
Sure. Well, okay, I can say that, for instance, Anarita is very influenced when she is in Sperlonga, she's in this beach resort. She is very influenced by an older woman whom she meets there and who sees a lot of similarities with her and perhaps how she behaved when she was younger with men. So she's able to point out certain ways that perhaps Anarita is sabotaging herself by always selecting the wrong men. And so that's a minor character that she becomes very close to because they both love to cook. Anarita's real passion is not teaching English to spoiled. She loves cooking. And so they create this bond, even though this woman is in her 80s. But they have a real bond, and they're able to talk about things, and also from, you know, from experience, this 80-year-old woman, she is able to also help Anarita a little bit to understand how things are. And, of course, you know, not being someone within the family or something, she's able to come out externally and tell her certain things about mistakes that she's made. So with Emma, she is having a difficult relationship with her daughter, who's 16, and she's trying to protect her because, you know, the father's kind of abandoned them. He's, once they divorce, he's not living there anymore. He's not very interested in them. And, you know, he's got a very active dating life. And so, you know, this is also the mother-daughter relationship in the teenage years, which is already difficult, but her teenage daughter is taking a lot out on her. So this is also something that she has to work through. And Emma also has a very difficult mother as well, who comes over ostensibly to help, but of course is making everything worse. So they also have to, you know, they have a lot of, let's say, quite a few tense issues that they have within their family life or, you know, relationships that they also have to get a grip on. So yeah, there are quite a few minor characters who are quite important to the plot and to understanding, you know, how they're going to be able to work this out and improve their own lives.
Man, I'm good, man. You better get this 3 points.
And there's lots of Rome.
Oh, my goodness.
I should have said Rome is a character in the book, too, because, of course, you know, as you know, because you said you know Rome, it's a beautiful city. So a lot of people have told me that Rome is a secondary character in this book. So
wow.
That's probably the most important
goodness.
One.
Oh, my goodness. Now, once you got started writing, you said it took you years to really sit down and start writing your first novel. But you were on a roll. So within about a year of releasing 3 Coins, you wrote and published Dark Blue Ways. Could you please give us an overview of Dark Blue Ways?
Sure. That is I call it an ode to Jane Austen because I love Jane Austen. And so I so love the idea of being able to do a story of a modern woman. She's studying for her master's degree in English literature. She has the opportunity to go on a Jane Austen seminar in Bath in the United Kingdom, in England, which is where Jane Austen, you know, used to live and wrote two of her novels are set there. And while she's there, she has an accident and actually travels back in time to 1813. So she's living in the same house in the Crescent. She winds up waking up there in 1813 and, of course, is very confused about how this happened and how she will get back. But the thing that I wanted to play with there is this is a woman who, on paper, knows and loves the time. So she has studied Jane Austen. She's done everything on this. She's writing her thesis on social customs of the time in the era. But it's a different thing on the page and to live that, right? Because she can't, she has to pretend that she's from the time, and she starts getting confused. I mean, the war of 1812 that we fought, was it only 1812? Did it continue into 1813? Are England and America still enemies? So she's finding herself in a lot of trouble for these little things, or not knowing this is the time of Napoleon, which battles were going on there, where are we? So, and just things like, you know, wearing a corset, which she hadn't, you know, she knows about it, but she's never worn it before. She actually does know how to ride, but she certainly never had to ride side saddle. So it was fun for me to do this. And for her to go back in time and to have the difficulties with that, but also to reflect on the differences in time, to have this opportunity to go back. So she winds up making a very good friend who lives in the house, whose portrait she had looked at in modern days every day. And also she had this, so this is Emma Huntington. And Emma Huntington has a very handsome brother, Sir Edward, but he's also very proud and, a bit arrogant and a little bit difficult, a little bit brusque. So she has to be very careful how she handles things in this situation. And she never doesn't know yet if she's going to go back or how to go back. So she has to discover that too. So that was just super fun for me because I love the period. I love Jane Austen. I love the idea of going back in time. And the title is also, Denise, one that I lifted from something else because Dark Blue Waves is from a poem of Lord Byron, who was contemporary poetry in 1813. And it's a beautiful poem called Child-Held Pilgrim, about the dark blue waves of the Mediterranean that carry you on to unknown lands, because Byron was a traveler. He traveled all over. And my character, Janet, feels a real affinity with that because she also is obviously in uncharted waters and being back in 1813 and, trying to discover things anew. So, I had a lot of themes that I could, friendship, love, how things change, the slower pace of life at the time. Then, of course, looking at the negative side of it, the servants in the house who have to do everything, the children who die very young. There's a measles outbreak that she has to help with. So there were a lot of fun things for me to be able to explore with that one.
Oh, my goodness. Now, if this gives us part of the story away, then don't tell. Just let me know. But you said she had an accident. What time period was she initially in, and what was the accident? Did she get in a machine by accident? What was the accident that took her back to in time?
The time period is modern day, so she's there, contemporary to when she is in Bath on her seminar, and accident kind of is the way to time travel that she discovers. So I wouldn't want to give it away how, but I can suggest that there's a famous painting involved without giving too much away, but giving something.
Interesting. So you talked about the woman named Emma who shows up in the book as well. Does someone named Emma show up in each of your novels? Just curious, and if so, is there a reason for that?
Oh, that is a very good question, but no, in this, you're right, there were in these two, but it was just by chance that it was this one. No, it is a nice name, however. I don't have Emma's in any of the others.
Yeah, that's my grandmother's name, so
it's
very
fond of
that name.
It's a beautiful name.
Yes.
I love it.
What have readers been saying about Dark Blue Waves, and do people who appreciate Jane Austen's work, do they find themselves attracted to the novel?
Yeah, I did write it in a way that you don't have to know Jane, because I do get that people might like to read it without having read it. So I think that there's maybe things that you appreciate more because there are certain aspects that are, let's say, similar to Jane Austen or people will recognize for this and that. But I think that I've had people who said that they hadn't read Jane Austen. I've had a few this makes me super happy that they say that now they want to, that they've never gotten through Pride and Prejudice, but now they want to read it. And that just thrills me when I hear a reader say that.
Does Janet, the star of the show in Dark Blue Waves, does she, I've watched, like, what was it, The Time Traveler's Wife? I didn't care for the movie, and I didn't read the book, but he kept going in and out of different scenes, the time periods. Does Janet move, does she stay in the past and then pop back into the future, and then she's just in today's time? Or does she go back and forth and back and forth?
So she starts in the future and goes back. And then she's a difficult decision because on the one hand, of course, she's very worried about being caught out because she does get herself into trouble. She is a modern woman, and so sometimes she is saying the wrong thing and getting herself into trouble. And then there might be a kind of a growing love interest with Sir Edward, right? So that also creates some problems since he's very wealthy and handsome, and there are other women who are interested in him. So this creates a bit of a conflict, let's say, with some of the women of the time. But she has a hard choice to make about whether she will go back, there are a lot of things that she likes about going back to 1813. It's a period she already loves, but then, you know, she forms this deep friendship with Emma Huntington, and she has friends, and they spend, you know, evenings instead of, I don't know, watching television or doing things, they read poetry together. She likes the slower pace. She likes the discussion she has. So she starts reflecting, too, on which life she wants to have. And so this will become an integral part of going back, and whether or not she wants to be able to get back to the past again.
Interesting. Oh, I love how your stories are so well developed. That said, definitely want to talk about In the Shadow of the, and please say it, correct me, Apennines. If you could tell
you
us.
You can say it also. It's either Apennines or Apennines.
Apennines,
so,
okay. If you could tell us about, give us a synopsis of In the Shadow of the Apennines.
Yeah, that is, so the Apennine Mountains, for those that don't know, so Italy is very long, obviously, the boot. And so in the north you have the Alps, and the Apennines cut all the way through Italy, right through the boot, basically, right down to the bottom of the boot. And the region that this is called Abruzzo. So Abruzzo is the region that, you know, Rome, so it's directly east from Rome. It's on the other side of Italy, on the Adriatic. And it's a very mountain. They have the seaside, but most of it is very mountainous. And it was quite isolated until some, you know, basically they didn't build a highway there until the 1980s. So it was actually quite isolated. And when a lot of this story takes place pre-World War I, so in 1914, because Italy entered into the war a little bit later in 1915, it's incredibly isolated. So that's a dual timeline. I have a contemporary story of an American woman who is also going through a very difficult time and has gone through a difficult divorce, has lost her job at a university, and wants to start life over, and perhaps foolishly decides that she'd like to buy something far away from it all and moves to this town in Abruzzo, this region in the mountains, so a kind of a mountain cottage that she has to fix up. Things are going very well at first. She really loves it. She's having times, but she's reflecting over her life and things, how they worked out and maybe mistakes made. But things are going generally quite well. And she's making friends and improving her Italian, which, you know, she needs to improve living there. And then something happens. She starts doing with social media. She starts creating a blog, and she realizes she gets lots of likes when she speaks about kind of how backwards the people in the town are and some of the things and the things like that. So she gets herself into a lot of trouble. Someone in the town discovers it, and then she's just very isolated. And there are some other reasons that create problems for her because there are a few little twists in there. But at that time when she's at her lowest, she discovers in her house a kind of hidden nook where there's where there has been a trunk that has been there for many years. And in there she finds the diaries and letters of a past inhabitant of the house who had lived there, and she starts reading those when she doesn't have any friends, when she's pretty much isolated from the town, and she's completely engrossed in this story. And this is taken from a real story of a town that was completely, this girl who had been a shepherdess and had been very young, had lived in a town called Pescina, which had been almost completely destroyed by an earthquake in 1915. So we see the build-up to that moment of the earthquake and Italy's entry into World War I through the eyes of this little girl, this shepherdess, a 16-year-old, and the years that pass and all of the things that happened to her and how strong she had to be because her whole family basically perished in the earthquake. So we see this going through the diaries and her also finding certain parallels with her own life or allowing it to reflect on her own life and seeing the strength of this girl. And through this, and who had then moved to her house, so she liked the idea that they had lived in the same, you know, house a century apart. But she gets a lot of strength from this and also a big understanding of the region. And, and so this makes a big difference to her.
So this is Samantha who's become isolated. And the little girl, I'm assuming, is Elena?
Yes.
Elena? How are they... How old is Samantha? Elena was 16. Earthquake hits 1915. Her whole family perishes. Samantha finds her diaries and is just amazed at how the strength in this girl. And Samantha now is isolated, similar to Elena, before from a different cause. And she's got to be strong. So I wanted to ask you, just how are Samantha and Elena alike? And how are they different? And how old is Samantha?
Yeah, she is 45 when she goes there, so there's a huge difference in age. Of course, Elena was 16 when the diaries start, and then the diaries continue on, but a 16-year-old, I think, in 1914 when the diaries start, of course, is probably more mature than the average 16-year-old, you know, today, also because she had to make her living, she had to be on her own, so she had to grow up very quickly. However, that being said, she winds up, of course, their lives are completely different. I mean, you know, certainly coming from, because this town was really very incredibly poor even before the earthquake. And after the earthquake, obviously, much worse, which is how Elena finds her way to this town where Samantha will one day move into that house. And Elena, you know, you see a lot of the poverty of the region and the difficulties that they had because they didn't really have land. They would work for the more the noble families, let's say, who were of the region. And it was a very difficult life. And I came to this story why I wanted to do it. One, because Pechin is a real place, and I saw this town. I went to this town and was amazed because so many of the buildings that had been destroyed in this devastating earthquake are still like that. They were left like that. So you walk through the town, and some are fully intact, and some are completely destroyed. And there's an Italian author whom I love called Ignazio Silone, and he was from that town, and he survived the earthquake, and his whole family perished. And he wrote beautiful books about, he fictionalizes it, but it's that town and that region and the poverty, the terrible poverty. And his books brought a lot of attention to that, about how... you know, not that far from Rome, actually, but in Abruzzo, how there were some of these really poor towns that were just not, the people were incredibly, it was an incredibly difficult time for them to have enough food, to have decent lodging, and it was the beginning of the century. And then, of course, with World War One, that just made it worse. So, since so many of the young men died and didn't come back, so, it was interesting for her, because here this American woman, Samantha, who comes over and is quite arrogant with the town members and looks down on them, she starts to understand all the things that she does not know. So she also, aside from finding the parallels with Elena's life, even though they're very different, she also realizes that she hasn't been very understanding about their culture, about their background, or having enough respect for the people there. So she also looks at her own actions and realizes that she hurt people from what she didn't know.
Oh, my gosh, you developed stories so well. I'm listening to you. I've had authors on Off the Shelf. I'm telling them, like, if you could get on, I tell them, man, you got to get on podcasts, and if you go to book festivals, get on a panel. If you talk about your stories, everybody will want to go out and buy your books. You can't. It's hard as an author to put it all in the description. When you put it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, et cetera,
You almost need to hear the author talk about the characters and the story development, and then that's when it really gets truly, truly rich. Now, as we come down to this, like, about 10 minutes left, is Drink Wine and Be Beautiful, is this your first published short story collection? You kind of veered off with this one. And what inspired you to write a book, a collection of short stories?
Yeah, well, Denise, I have always loved short stories. And actually, this collection was kind of why I became a self-published author, because when I started wanting to write, I went to writing conferences and I would meet with agents and publishers and everything, and would go to these, and I would always kind of test the waters and see how, what they thought about short story collections, and they, all of them pretty much said, no, forget it, they don't sell, it's not that, which is unfortunately true, because I love short stories, but it is true that today short story collections, not individual short story, don't sell so well. But then I said, well, but if I'm self-published, I can do it myself, and I can,
there
and I can
go.
See, you know, if it sells 5 copies, I'll be happy. If it, but at least I will feel like I did it, because I love short stories. These Drink Wine and Be Beautiful is, yet you're starting to notice a pattern, probably a title that I stole from another far better writer, that is from E.M. Forrester. So it's speaking about Italians. It's speaking, there's a wonderful book that he wrote called, although it's not his best book, he has so many wonderful novels, but Where Angels Fear to Tread, which is a beautiful passages about Italy in that book. And he has these English characters coming, you used to come with horse and carriages, right, to get to Italy. So they have to travel all the way from England, and they're passing through the Germanic countries, and he says that they pass through the mountains, and the river shrank, and the hills grew lower, and the people ceased drinking beer and being ugly, and instead began to drink wine and be beautiful. So it's actually quite a nice thing to say about the Italians. So I said, well, that's a great line. I'm going, of course, take it for my title, because my short stories are all based either in Italy with either Italian women or foreign women who are living here, and often the Italian women, let's say, there's some connection to Italy all the time. So they're, but all different stories. It's women's fiction, so it's very much, when I heard you speak about your one true self, how you opened this segment, I mean, I consider that we probably have a similar outlook with what we were doing with our books with this, because for me it's all about different aspects of self-realization. So women who are going through divorce, widowhood, motherhood. I have one about a young mother who has to move to Rome because her husband comes here, and she's really struggling. She's having a really hard time, and she doesn't have any friends, and she doesn't know things. So one friendship can really change her life. I have older women who have been friends all their lives, and then they have the big fight that might destroy their friendship, because they both have, one is very liberal, one is very conservative, and they always fight about this, but one fight that breaks up, and what will happen after a lifetime together. I have other ones that show, what happens in a snowstorm. We rarely get snow in Rome, but in Rome, at a snowstorm, two women at the airport exchange suitcases. And this winds up very strangely kind of changing their lives and changing their perspective. So there are lots of stories like this that look at different aspects of life and different stages of life, and kind of finding this inner strength that you can find, or looking at your life in a different way. So for me, I had a wonderful time. I love short stories. I want to write more short stories, and I'm fortunate that it's been selling quite well, and people seem to like it so far. So I'm thrilled. I mean, for me, I wanted to get this out in the world. So I will go back to novels. My next one will be a novel, but I've so loved writing this short story collection.
Awesome. Oh, my goodness. You know, you see, like, with Kindle Bella and a lot of people, it could be time as well. We were talking earlier about how kids played outside more. Now they have technology, so they're busy with video games and just virtual world that they so connected with. But our lives are so busy, most people. Yeah. So a short story is maybe the most, of the, a lot of readers, they don't want to read more than 20, 30 pages. They don't want to read like a 300-page or 250-page novel, so they're attracted to a short story. Mm-hmm. So kudos mm-hmm. to you. Now, we've talked about, and you have just, oh, my gosh, everything you've written sounds so just engaging, so well-developed. I have to ask you this. What writing process do you follow, Kimberly? Do you do outlines, character sketches? How do you take a story from concept to finish?
Yeah, I unfortunately, Denise, I do none of that. I am a terrible pantser. I am a pantser from the beginning. I know my, first of all, I always write. I mean, I do make an effort to always write, even if it's just a little bit. I do tend to write a lot, and I tend to luckily write quite quickly, which is good. But I need to develop everything on the page. I mean, I always have an idea of the themes I want to have. For me, setting is very important. I mean, my stories all have a strong setting in them and or a sense of history, some period in history that I want to look at. So those I always have a clear idea on. But otherwise, I have to develop it on the page. So that's how I do it. And I know some people are so good about outlining and doing whole character sketches and everything, but I just found that it just slows me down a lot doing that because I don't develop it in the way that I want to. So, of course, I go back and I read it multiple times, and then I'll make changes and things like that. But I have to I have to understand my characters on the written page. I'm completely unable to do all of the wonderful plotting that everyone can do. I just cannot do that. So now when I find craft classes, I look for that.
You describe your characters are well developed in the way you whatever works for you. And I would say most of the people we've had on the show are right just the way you say you do. Can you share Yes. Can you share 3 to 4 steps that you found to be effective at getting the word out about your short stories and your books?
Yeah, so, I mean, in general, of course, as you know, the marketing is probably the hardest aspect, right? Because this idea that you can just write a book and then it'll get out there and people will find it is completely not a way to do it. No matter whether you're traditionally published, whether you're self-published,
yes.
you're going to be marketing. So I think
yes.
people just have to understand that from the from the get-go.
Yes.
I actually do like marketing. I have an MBA, and my focus is strategy and marketing. So I have done a lot of strategy and marketing in my life for other things. So now I'm trying to learn better how to do it with books. So I do really like that. I do love being on podcasts. That's a great way to do it. I go to writing conferences too, and I'm going to be speaking at a couple of conferences that are going to be here in Italy. So those are wonderful ways to kind of meet readers and to get out and do that. Obviously, like everyone, I have my newsletter. I have social media. I blog. I blog about a lot of the aspects of the books, that what goes into it, the regions, because I love to travel. So I like to include tips like that. And, just getting a lot of other authors. I also help my friends in marketing their work. I'm a big reader, so I'm a NetGalley reader and read a lot of books that are there. I love getting my book out early for early reviews, and I do get it out to Kirkus and Midwest Book Review and all of the big ones for editorial reviews. That helps a lot, too. So, but I think it's just constant. I get the impression.
Yeah,
I don't know if you found a shortcut, but...
and I appreciate you sharing that for our listeners who themselves might be interested maybe they'll take, whether it's blogging or something you do going on podcasts that can benefit them. And I always like to share that for our listeners so they can get just even more than the entertainment but some other benefits from the show. Where can off-the-shelf listeners get a copy of your books?
Sure. Well, I suppose the best place to find everything about the books would be on my website that you already mentioned, which is KimberlySullivanAuthor.com. And there are the direct links to Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, where you can find them all. And, and also, if you don't mind, if I mention, I will be having a new one out in October, too, which will be set in Rome here and in the 1890s. And so that will be coming, hopefully, out fairly soon on NetGalley. So if you have any NetGalley readers on here, even better, if they would look for Rome's Last Noble Palace, that will be out later this summer, and I'd love early reviews. So that might be a way to see whether or not they like my writing or something with one of the early ones. But all of the books, yes, are available at all of the Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble. And, I'm always happy for new readers, and I love reviews. So, I'm always happy to get reviews. And if anyone is interested on my website as well, I have my newsletter. So I'd be thrilled if people want to sign up for the newsletter.
Yes, we have just had the absolute delight, pleasure of having being our guest today, Ms. Kimberly Sullivan. She's the author of the books Dark Blue Waves, Drink Wine and Be Beautiful, Three Coins, and The Shadows of the Apennines, and her latest, what's the name of your, that's coming out in October?
That's going to be at Rome's Last Noble Palace.
Rome's Last Noble Palace. Look for it in October. And her website, again, is KimberlySullivanAuthor.com, KimberlySullivanAuthor.com, KimberlySullivan.com. You're going to love her website. Just go over there to give yourself a treat, and then please purchase one of her books. We thank you, Kimberly, for being here with us on Off the Shelf Books. This Saturday, to our guests, we will be back next Saturday with another awesome guest. Set it on your calendar that you're going to catch Off the Shelf Books podcast at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time or New York City time on Saturdays. Look what you got this Saturday. You don't want to miss this. If you love books, you love stories, short stories, poems. We've had movie producers on here, all things story. Just make it on your calendar. You're going to tune in to Off the Shelf Books podcast. Kimberly, I can't thank you enough. You were just amazing. What a wonderful, wonderful guest. Thank you so, so much. Keep writing and sharing those awesome stories and novels that you write. I'll send you an email when the show finishes streaming. To our guests, remember, as I always tell you, you are awesome. You are amazing. You are phenomenal. Go out and create a fabulous day for yourself. Kimberly, thank you again. Bye for now.
Thank you so much, Denise.